He stared at her. It was almost a leer, as if nothing that she could offer him would be as toothsome a morsel as herself. Shadow felt deeply uncomfortable. It was like watching an old wolf stalking a fawn too young to know that if it did not run, and run now, it would wind up in a distant glade with its bones picked clean by the ravens. The girl blushed once more and told them that dessert was apple pie a la mode.
That's with a scoop of vanilla ice cream.
Christmas cake a la mode, or a red and green whipped pudding. Wednesday stared into her eyes and told her that he would try the Christmas cake a la mode. Shadow passed.
Now, as griffs go, the fiddle game goes back 300 years or more. And if you pick your chicken correctly, you could still play it tomorrow, anywhere in America.
I thought you said that your favorite grift was no longer practical.
I did indeed. However, that is not my favorite. It was fine and enjoyable, but not my favorite. No, my favorite was one they called the Bishop Game. It had everything. Excitement, subterfuge, portability, surprise. Perhaps I think from time to time, perhaps with a little modification, it might... No, its time has passed. It is, let us say, 1920, in a city of medium to large size. Chicago, perhaps, or New York, or Philadelphia. We are in a jeweler's emporium. A man dressed as a clergyman, and not just any clergyman, but a bishop in his purple, enters and picks out a necklace, a gorgeous and glorious confection of diamonds and pearls, and pays for it with a dozen of the crispest $100 bills. There's a smudge of green ink on the topmost bill, and the store owner, apologetically but firmly, sends the stack of bills to the bank on the corner to be checked. Soon enough, the store clerk returns with the bills. The bank says they are none of them counterfeit. The owner apologizes again, and the bishop is most gracious. He well understands the problem. There are such lawless and ungodly types in the world today, such immorality and lewdness abroad in the world, and shameless women, and now that the underworld has crawled out of the gutter and come to live on the screens of the picture palaces, what more could anyone expect? And the necklace is placed in its case, and the store owner does his best not to ponder why a bishop of the church would be purchasing a $1,200 diamond necklace, nor why he would be paying good cash money for it. The bishop bids him a hearty farewell and walks out on the street, only for a heavy hand to descend on his shoulder.
"Why, Soapy, you spalpeen, up to your old tricks, are you?"
And a broad beat cop with an honest Irish face walks the bishop back into the jewelry store.
"Begging your pardon, but has this man just bought anything from you?" asks the cop.
"Certainly not," says the bishop. "Tell him I have not."
"Indeed he has," says the jeweler. "He bought a pearl and diamond necklace from me, paid for it in cash as well."
"Would you have the bills available, sir?" asks the cop. So the jeweler takes the $1,200 bills from the cash register and hands them to the cop, who holds them up to the light and shakes his head in wonder.
"Oh, Soapy, Soapy," he says. "These are the finest that you've made yet. You're a craftsman that you are."
A self-satisfied smile spreads across the bishop's face.
"You can't prove nothing," says the bishop. "And the bank says that they were on the level. It's the real green stuff."
"I'm sure they did," agrees the cop on the beat.
"But I doubt that the bank had been warned that Soapy Sylvester was in town, nor of the quality of the $100 bills he'd been passing in Denver and in St. Louis." And with that, he reaches into the bishop's pocket and pulls out the necklace. $1,200 worth of diamonds and pearls in exchange for 50 cents worth of paper and ink," says the policeman, who is obviously a philosopher at heart.
"Unpassing yourself off as a man of the church. You should be ashamed," he says, as he claps the handcuffs on the bishop, who is obviously no bishop, and he marches him away.
but not before he gives the jeweler a receipt for both the necklace and the 1,200 counterfeit dollars. It's evidence, after all.
Was it really counterfeit?
Of course not. Fresh banknotes straight from the bank, only with a thumbprint and a smudge of green ink on a couple of them to make them a little more interesting.
Shadow sipped his coffee. It was worse than prison coffee.
So the cop was obviously no cop. And the necklace?
Evidence,
said Wednesday. He unscrewed the top from the salt shaker, poured a little heap of salt on the table.
But the jeweler gets a receipt and assurance that he'll get the necklace straight back as soon as Soapy comes to trial. He is congratulated on being a good citizen, and he watches proudly, already thinking of the tale he'll have to tell at the next meeting of the Odd Fellows tomorrow night, as the policeman marches the man, pretending to be a bishop, out of the store. $1,200 in one pocket, a $1,200 diamond necklace in the other. On their way to a police station, that'll never see hide nor hair of either of them.
The waitress had returned to clear the table.
Tell me, my dear, are you married?
She shook her head.
Astonishing that a young lady of such loveliness has not yet been snapped up.
He was doodling with his fingernail in the spilled salt, making squat, blocky, rune-like shapes. The waitress stood passively beside him, reminding Shadow less of a fawn and more of a young rabbit caught in an 18-wheeler's headlights, frozen in fear and indecision. Wednesday lowered his voice, so much so that Shadow, only across the table, could barely hear him.
What time do you get off work?
9:30 latest.
And what is the finest motel in this area?
There's a Motel 6. It's not much.
Wednesday touched the back of her hand, fleetingly, with the tips of his fingers, leaving crumbs of salt on her skin. She made no attempt to wipe them off.
To us,
he said, his voice an almost inaudible rumble.
It shall be a pleasure palace.
The waitress looked at him. She bit her thin lips, hesitated, then nodded and fled for the kitchen.
Come on. She looks barely legal.
I've never been overly concerned about legality. Not as long as I get what I want. Sometimes the nights are long and cold, and I need her. Not as an end in herself, but to wake me up a little. Even King David knew that there is one easy prescription to get warm blood flowing through an old frame. Take one virgin, call me in the morning.
Shadow caught himself wondering if the girl on night duty in the hotel back in Eagle Point had been a virgin.
Don't you ever worry about disease? What if you knock her up? What if she's got a brother?
No. I don't worry about diseases. I don't catch them. People like me avoid them. Unfortunately, for the most part, people like me fire blanks, so there's not a great deal of interbreeding. It used to happen in the old days. Nowadays it's possible, but so unlikely as to be almost unimaginable. So no worries there. And many girls have brothers and fathers. Some even have husbands. It's not my problem. 99 times out of 100, I've left town already.
So we're staying here for the night?
Wednesday rubbed his chin.
I shall stay in the Motel 6,
he said. Then he put his hand into his coat pocket. He pulled out a front door key, bronze-colored, with a card tag attached, on which was typed an address. 502 Northridge Road, apartment number 3.
You, on the other hand, have an apartment waiting for you in a city far from here.
Wednesday closed his eyes for a moment. Then he opened them, gray and gleaming and fractionally mismatched, and he said,
The Greyhound bus will be coming through town in 20 minutes. It stops at the gas station. Here's your ticket.
He pulled out a folded bus ticket, passed it across the table. Shadow picked it up and looked at it.
Who's Mike Ainsell?
He asked. That was the name on the ticket.
You are. Happy Christmas.
And where's Lakeside?
Your happy home in the months to come. And now, because good things come in threes,
He took a small gift-wrapped package from his pocket, pushed it across the table. It sat beside the ketchup bottle with the black smears of dried ketchup on the top. Shadow made no move to take it.
"Well?"